Ladies and gentlemen, you are now entering the Decent Christian Talk podcast. Enjoy.
Decent Christian Talk episode number 85.
85.
What a great year that was.
I mean, it wasn't as good as 89, but
yeah, whatever.
I've heard that people were born in that year if they are still around.
I guess I'm here.
Okay.
We are a show by the fans for the fans. Sorry, I missed your spot.
No,
there.
It's okay. I missed it as well. I'm only about halfway through this coffee.
It's all good. We got a great show for you today. Mark Lee from the amazing band Third Day stopped by to talk to us today.
What?
Yes. One of my favorite bands of all time growing up, Third Day. And he's on the show today.
How did you manage to pull that off?
Well, you'll have to find out by becoming a subscriber on patreon.com/decentchristiantalk. For as low as $1 a month, you can join our team and help fund our show. And for $5 a month and up, subscribers, you get bonus shows. And on this week's bonus show, we will talk about how that all came to be. And it was quite the story.
Yeah, it surprised me.
And on this week's show, we will talk about our throwback album of the week. And since we're talking with Mark Lee of Third Day, we're going to talk about their third album, Time, which celebrates its 20th anniversary this year.
Did you pick that as the album of the week before you set up the interview?
I guess you'll have to find out in our Patreon episode.
Okay.
And, yeah, so before we get into the interview, I will say as a caveat, Mark and I actually talk about the album in the interview, so it's a little bit of a preview of the bonus episode. And also, if you want to give a little bit more on our Patreon page, $10 a month subscribers get access to the exclusive DCT Music Club, and in that way you get a physical copy of any album from any artist that's been on our podcast. Every 6 months you get that physical copy of an album to your door. Physical copies, what a concept. Long lost.
Yeah, physical copies. I was just listening to a physical copy yesterday. I was driving a friend's vehicle, and they had country music playing, so I politely turned off the radio and played music on my phone.
Yeah, that's crazy. So if you want access to that, you can get that exclusively at patreon.com/decentchristiantalk. So, heading into the interview, Third Day, Mark Lee. This is kind of a big deal for me because Third Day growing up in the mid to late 90s was probably one of my favorite artists out there, especially with those first three albums were pretty fantastic.
Conspiracy Number 5 is maybe the first album I remember you like sitting down with your guitar and figuring out how to play it.
Yeah, so and we'll talk about that in the interview, about that album and going into the album Time and the importance of all that. But
you talked about you playing it with your guitar?
No, not that much.
Okay.
I don't want to embarrass myself too much. But anyway, without further ado, here is our interview with Third Day's Mark Lee.
All right, hit that horn, babe. Let's dance.
How you doing?
You know what? I'm doing really good. I am in just a fun, you know, exciting kind of phase of my career here where we did the Third Day farewell tour last year, finished that up end of June. We played this great show at Red Rocks. And then now I'm embarking on this new phase as an independent musician. And I have probably worked harder in the last year or so than I ever have, but it's been so rewarding doing that. So I'm really having a great time doing this. I've been having a blast.
Yeah, tell me a little bit about that. I know you released an EP called Unshakable Heart, and you also wrote a book called Hurt Road. Was this something that was a process over the course of your career? You just had these songs that you'd written, or was that just a result of that season of the farewell tour? Well, how did these songs and the book come about?
You know what? So now, the book, it was a good 10 or more year process. It's something that I've always wanted to do. My mom was a school librarian when I was growing up, and she would always bring books home, and I loved reading and just always had aspirations to one day write a book myself. And so we got a break in our touring schedule about 5 years ago, and I was able to sit down and over the course of a couple months crank out a draft for that, and then I was able to partner with a publisher who did an amazing job of helping me, you know, kind of get it across the finish line and get it released. So that was the case of the book was a, you know, very long process. Now, for the EP that came out last year, when Mac and myself, Mac is a singer for Third Day, we decided that we wanted to do the farewell tour. Part of that was we wanted to give a chance for our fans to come see us one more time. But then also for Mac and myself to be able to show people a little taste of the future of what's coming. So both of us did solo sets on that farewell tour. Mm. And because I knew I was going to be doing new music on that tour, I was like, man, I've got to have this done and finished in time for the tour. So I partnered with Scotty Wilbanks, who played keyboards for Third Day for the last probably 10 or 15 years of our existence. Yeah. Partnered with him, he produced it, and we wrote the song Hurt Road that's on the EP together. But so we were just really, I mean, from the second I decided to make that EP, we were like, you know, behind, you know, we were under the gun the whole time. So it was two very different processes. You know, the Hurt Road, the book, was a, you know, long season of, you know, kind of percolating ideas and letting those evolve naturally. Whereas the music was like, oh my gosh, you know, I'm going to be, you know, touring in 2 months. We've got to make a record. So, there's something very, very interesting happens when you have a deadline like that. You're able to be very creative, you know, during that time. It's like you feel like you have to rise to the occasion. And I am very proud of that record. There are, I love every song on there. Hurt Road, the song, in a lot of ways was the hardest song I've ever written. And when I say that, it's not because, and yes, the subject material is difficult because I'm referring to an accident that I had in high school. I talk about that in the book as well. And then also losing my father to cancer also when I was in high school. So that, yes, it's difficult subject matter, but really for me, it was just a hard process of writing that song because I was trying to take the ideas from a, you know, 200 page book and get all that down into a little, you know, 3.5 minute hooky little pop song. So that was a big challenge, but it was so much fun to do. And I'm really proud of how that one turned out. There's Glorious One is the second track. And it's just that is the one song that I had kind of laying around that I had co-written out. I'm good friends with the guys in the choir, the alternative kind of Christian rock band. So I had written that song with Mark and Steve from the choir about maybe 7 or 8 years ago and loved the song, but it had just never found a home. And so I was like, well, I'm going to record this for this project. Really, really proud of how that one turned out. And then we have the title track, Unshakable Heart. It was a song that I wrote for my daughters. I love sitting around just picking out melodies on my guitar, and I had it tuned to this kind of alternate tuning. And that song really kind of wrote itself. Like once I kind of started just playing that little melody on the guitar, it just really all came out. And, you know, and those songs are fun when they happen because it usually doesn't happen that way. It's usually much more of a pulling teeth kind of process, at least for me.
Yeah. I, in full disclosure, I think the first time I saw Third Day was 96.
Okay. Yeah.
It was, I think you actually played a show with Rich Mullins, if that rings a bell.
Yeah. We did a few. Do you remember where it was?
I think it was at Creation and at Hershey Park.
Okay, yeah, yeah. We were so blessed for, you know, I think Rich passed away in, was it 97 or 98?
Yeah, 97.
And we were so blessed for just a very short season of about a year and a half that we were on the same record company with Rich and got to do a couple of, kind of showcase events with him. We just became fast friends. We had him actually, he played on a song called Praise Song that was on our very first album.
Right, right.
And we got to be friends, and anytime we would share the stage at a festival, we would have Rich come up and sing a song with us, or, you know, Mac would come out and sing with Rich, you know, whatever. And it was amazing. He was a great guy. He was at a stage in his career where he was a great mentor to us. Rich was, he was very honest. He had this kind of almost prophetic kind of quality about him that, he would see things that he didn't like, and he would talk about it. You know, he wasn't afraid to speak his mind about those things. And so I know we were, very early stages of our career, and he was a little bit later, and he was a little bit more, I would say, jaded about the music industry. So a lot of the advice he shared with us was like, man, guys, you got to watch your back. And it's good advice. It's really good advice because, most of the time, musicians, when we start out, we're so young, and there's this whole business side of it that we have no idea about. We've already, sold our publishing rights off before we even know what that is, that kind of thing. So, it was great to have somebody, like that speaking into our lives at that point in time.
Well, I know you guys covered Creed. What went into the decision? I know you guys probably wanted to honor him in a way, but why did you choose that song?
Yeah, so the origin of that was they were doing, when Rich put out his greatest hits record, it was just called Songs. And I think it might have come out in 96, I might be getting the time off a little bit. But I think it was 96, and they used to do this big Gospel Music Week in Nashville, and they would have, industry people would all come to town for a week in April. And as part of that, because Rich had this greatest hits album coming out, they did a tribute concert to Rich. And most of the artists were friends of Rich and sort of his peers. I remember Ashley Cleveland was on the bill, and the guys that were in the Ragamuffin band, there was one of them had like kind of a rockabilly band called This Train, like that guy.
Mark Robertson.
Thank you. But yeah, so Mark did a song. Ashley Cleveland, I think maybe Carolyn Aarons did a song. There are a few other artists that would have been more like Rich's peers, and then we were this brand new band, these like 20-year-old kids had just signed to the same record company, and we were just huge fans of his. And so we got invited to be a part of that, and it was a huge career moment for us that we were able to pay tribute to Rich. And we chose to do Creed, and we did this very like the song started really like alternative rock, like really kind of dark, and then it went into this other thing. It was a big moment for us to play that for Rich and for the people that were there, and a lot of people had never seen us, didn't know who we even were. But it also, we found out after the fact, that was a big moment for Rich because that was the first time he realized that he was having an influence on younger artists that were coming on the scene. So it was a really neat, we had a really cool relationship with him, and it was awesome that it wasn't just a, we knew him, but we got to collaborate and had him play on a record, and we would have him, come join us on stage and things like that. So it was a lot of fun.
I love hearing those stories of Rich. So this show specifically, we are actually covering your album Time, turns 20 years old this year. Hard to believe.
That is very much hard to believe. That's crazy.
So take me back when you guys were heading into the studio. I know you just had put out Conspiracy. Sales wise, it was probably disappointing. I don't know what you guys thought of that, but it's one of my favorite albums. So any Third Day fan from day one, you ask them what their favorite album is, and you're probably going to get one of those first three albums. So what went into making Time, and what was your mindset after Conspiracy?
Yeah, it's interesting, and I think it's good that you mentioned Conspiracy Number 5, because we always, when we were about to go in the studio, a lot of times it was a reaction to what we had just done. It was really kind of like a pendulum where we would, even starting with the first album, we did this album, and we were aware of Hootie and the Blowfish when we were making the album. We hadn't listened to them. I think our producer may have a little bit, so he might have, you know, there's a lot of organ and background vocals and things that, that are reminiscent of that Hootie record that was so big. But we, you know, we come out and here Mac has a gravelly voice and we're doing this roots and music, and it just instantly gets compared to Hootie. So we made Conspiracy Number 5 as a reaction to that. And in a lot of ways, I think we overreacted. I think we could have just gone and made another, you know, album that, you know, we could have shown that we didn't sound like Hootie in other ways than going and making this hard left turn and making this alternative, you know, heavy rock record. I will say, I'm with you. It's one of my, I don't like the way it sounds. I don't think it's aged very well, the mix of it and, you know, some of the tones on it. But I love that album. Sure. I love that we were taking some risks. And as I've been embarking on my solo career, that spirit of, you know, and I keep using the word alternative as we're talking here, but that's been like in my mind, like I want to tap into that side of what Third Day did, because I don't feel like we hit on it much. I mean, there were elements of it on Wire maybe, and maybe even years later on Move. We had some elements of that side, but we didn't really hit on it much after Conspiracy. So as I've been doing my solo stuff, I want to tap back into that, because that's that era, you know, that kind of 90s music. It's some of my favorite music still to this day, just influence-wise. So I really want to try to hit back on that. But all that to say, after we had made Conspiracy, and yes, you're absolutely right, it had a great first week. And then after that, that was really kind of it. And in that era, you know, we would do singles would come out, you know, every 3 months. You know, now you have a single, you might work it 6 to 9 months or whatever. So you can have an album that's out for, you know, a year and a half, and you're totally fine before you go back in the studio. But it felt like we pretty quickly needed to start working on something new. And we were, of course, reacting to the lukewarm reaction that we got to Conspiracy. We were going to the studio. And I think at that point in our career, we didn't really know how to be a band in the studio. We were really well-versed in the live side. You know, we had, you know, late 98, early 99, when we were getting ready to record Time, we had done hundreds of shows at that point in time. But we had only, if you counted the time that we'd been in the studio as a band, you know, it's a couple of weeks, maybe 3 weeks, you know. So we didn't really know how to be a band in the studio. So those were some of the conversations we had with our record company. And I don't know whose idea it was. If somebody at the record company had reached out and connected with Monroe Jones, who had just worked with a guy named, my brain is not on, I think it was Wes Cunningham, I think was the guy's name. That may be wrong, but he had just worked with this solo artist and done this really cool, it was kind of Southern, but it had some Beatles elements, and it was a very interesting album. So they had played that for us, and we were like, wow, this is really cool. So we agreed to meet with Monroe. We were rehearsing at a rehearsal space in Nashville, and Monroe came in, and Monroe's always been very, just very over the top, just with his sense of style and his aesthetics. You know, just some of these, you know, musician types just look a little goofy when you see them. So Monroe, I remember he had on these striped pants, and I think he was even wearing like this hat that looked like an engineer hat, like a train guy would wear. And so he just came in, and he, you know, he's got this kind of wild hair and glasses, and I just was like, okay, who is this? What in the world? But you know, we sat down and talked a little bit, and we're all from Georgia. You know, we're from Atlanta. Mac Powell is originally from Alabama. Well, as we were talking, we realized Monroe is also from Alabama. And I remember Mac asked Monroe, he said, now, I know everybody calls you Monroe, but you're from Alabama. I bet everybody at home calls you Monroe, don't they? And Monroe was like, yeah. And if you want to 100%, being 100% honest, that was the moment when we were like, all right, this is one of us, man. We're going to work with this guy. So, but Monroe, he just had a very great sense of where we were as a band at that point in time and what we needed to do. We just needed to create an environment where we were just comfortable in the studio and just able to just kind of do our thing, just be a band. And so he was just like, you know, people are so worried about, you know, recording things one at a time and having everything sound just perfect. He's like, forget all that. Let's just have you guys set up as a band in the studio. We'll have like monitors in there blaring just like you're doing a show, and we'll figure out how to make that sound good. You know, let's don't worry about any of that. And so we did that, and we went to a used to be a great studio in Atlanta called Southern Tracks. I think it's still there, but it's kind of it's changed a lot. Like the original owner passed away a few years ago, and they don't have a lot of the gear there that they had at one point. But you know, 20 years ago, that was like the place to record in Atlanta, and there were all kinds of great artists from Train to Elton John to Bruce Springsteen. All of these big artists would go and record at that studio in Atlanta. So it was an amazing creative space to be in. So we set up at Southern Tracks with Monroe, and it was really special. Really, I think to this day, if you ask anybody from Third Day what our favorite album, at least from the recording experience, we always all go back to Time.
Yeah, I remember hearing those stories about you guys recording that live, and that's kind of unheard of. And it just sounds so good still. I just wonder why more bands don't do that.
Yeah, I know. And things, it's interesting, as you know, Third Day's career, we've kind of straddled a couple of different eras of music. I remember the first couple times we went in the studio to work on the early stages of what became the Bus album. This would have been the early 90s. You know, they still had tape machines, you know, very few.
Yeah.
You know, they had the digital stuff, but it usually would be like keyboard guys would use that to do the programming. You know, you didn't record the whole band that way. So to go from that to seeing how now you have, you know, you basically have kids with laptops making these amazing sounding records. You know, so we've seen that evolution happen. But yeah, back then it was kind of like this almost hybrid kind of thing. There was the digital thing and people were starting to record that way. But we approached it really like an old school, like Southern rock record. I remember the albums we were listening to in Monroe's, we were getting ready, you know, we're going back and listening to like Linda Ronstadt, Prisoner in Disguise, you know, all these great like California albums, like back in the late '60s, early '70s. And, you know, we played, you know, the songs that we loved, you know, of course, we're from the South. We love like the Allman Brothers and R.E.M. and other, you know, those type bands, you know, kind of Southern kind of things. So we had a lot of things in common. So those were kind of the things we were referencing. And so we were like, let's go in the studio. And that's kind of how they did, you know, back in the day, everybody would just kind of go in and set up as a band and play. And so that's what we decided to do. And, you know, it feels like in setting up that way that you're sacrificing something. You're sacrificing, like, you know, maybe some tonal qualities or some things with the vocals that you can't go back and do because you have this bleed through that happens sonically. But any of those kinds of things, the trade-off that you make with that to having the opportunity to just set up and just capture that special thing that happens when you have a band playing together live, I think it was totally worth that trade-off, because I think that the songs and just the whole sound of it, I mean, you can just feel that it sounds like there's a band playing. So it's really cool.
Yeah. So during that time was when you guys won all these awards, you started headlining tours. I mean, what, take me back to that. How did you guys stay humble? You know, what, you know, did the perception of your own success change you guys, or did you find a way to stay humble?
I think that I think it's really a both kind of thing. Yes, I think our perception definitely changed. We felt a lot more pressure. A lot of it was self-imposed pressure. We felt more pressure on ourselves than we did before. So I remember in particular when we were – so we did the – Time record, then we did the Offerings album, and honestly, the Offerings album was, I don't want to say that it was a throwaway record, but it felt like, okay, we had done Time, and then we're going to go in the studio and do this, you know, it was kind of half live, half studio. We all loved the Rattle and Hum record that was U2 that had that kind of sound,
right.
So we went ahead and did it. It was really easy to make because we only had to record like five or six new songs, and we had some live tracks that needed to be mixed. Did that, and then we released it, and we put it out in like June. I mean, which is like a horrible time to release an album. And we didn't think anything about it. We're like, all right, let's go in the studio and start working on the next record. And we actually did that. We started recording some tracks that ended up being on Come Together, the bulk of that album. But as we're in the studio working on Come Together, like, you know, you're seeing, you know, the first week sales are always pretty good, and then it just tapers off. But you started seeing, like, every week was like a first week, like, just seeing those sales, like, coming in. And it was like, wow, I mean, there's something really special going on. So we had recorded most of Come Together, but then we, with our, you know, our team, with our management record company, we decided to go and do another tour. That would have been spring of 01. And then you just start seeing, like, from the beginning of that tour, you have pretty good crowds to where by the end of it, we're playing in, like, big theaters and even, like, smaller arenas. And, like, there's these huge crowds coming out. And it's just like, wow, you know. We were not by any stretch an overnight success, because by that point, we had existed as a band for 10 years. But it did, when it started happening, it happened very quickly. And so we did feel that pressure. And as far as what you were saying about the perception internally of the band, we had always thought of ourselves as kind of outsiders. You know, we had up to that point, you know, we were from Atlanta, you know, even though most Christian artists, once they start doing it full time, they move to Nashville because that's just the thing that you do or did back then anyway. We had said, no, we're going to stay in Atlanta. And so we had always felt like kind of outsiders within Christian music. But the moment where that all changed was in 2001 at the Dove Awards. We got nominated for, like, you know, 10 or 12 Dove Awards. I can't even remember. Yeah, everything we were qualified for, we were nominated for. And then we won 5 Dove Awards. We won for Artist of the Year, Group of the Year. Mac won for Male Vocalist of the Year. I think we won an Album Award and a Song Award. So it was like, okay, if we are, you know, winning Artist of the Year at the Dove Awards, we can't say that we're on the outside of this anymore. So, and I remember the next day we had played at the Dove Awards. We had to fly across country. We're doing a show at an amusement park in California. And we were all just kind of shell-shocked, you know, partly from the travel, you know, that we'd had this long flight, and then now here we were getting ready to do a show. Ironically, I don't know if you've ever seen the movie Spinal Tap, but the scene where it shows them where they were opening up for the puppet show and they're playing at that little amphitheater and there's like 8 people there and there's the kid like giving the thumbs down. It was that same venue. It's really hilarious. We were playing at that venue out in California. But I'll remember Ty, our bass player, he said something that just really stuck with all of us. He said, now if people make fun of Christian music, they're making fun of us, because we're right at the center of what's going on. So we, during that time, we said, okay, we need to figure out, you know, cause this isn't about just about us. You know, we have all this attention placed on us. What do we do with that? And so it was really during that time that we decided we were going to get really involved with some charity work. We partnered with Habitat for Humanity for a season there. Worked with World Vision through the years, worked with Food for the Hungry for a long time there. So we just really felt like this spotlight that's shining on us, like, let's share that with some other worthy causes and use this platform that we've been given to point, you know, towards some things that people can get involved in. And we can try to be an example of what faith in action looks like. And so that was really, it was good. I mean, it was, you know, being put in that situation and feeling that pressure, but us really like grappling with that and praying it through as a band and turning that into something that became like really kind of the motivating force for the band from that moment forward. It was, I feel like that was a really pivotal moment in the life of the band.
Now you did mention Offerings, and that was kind of like the beginning of what we called like the modern worship movement. After all these years with where everybody's doing this worship music, where Offerings seemed kind of I don't know what you guys, if that was a label decision to come put that out or if it was your guys, but it seemed like a genuine thing at the time. All these years later, what do you think of where it seems like everybody is funneled into that whereas you guys decided to do that for a season and then go back into the rock thing. I mean, did that kind of give you a bad taste in your mouth after all these years that people did that just because that was the thing to do, or what?
You know what? So just to give you a little backstory on Offering. So we had the guy, David Martis, was our very first producer that did the Bus album. He was our manager for a season. And he had always said, you know, you guys need to do a praise and worship album. And he went to a Vineyard Church in Atlanta where they were doing modern worship stuff before anybody else was. And so we had, you know, partly from his encouragement and partly because we'd played a lot of youth camps and youth retreats and things where we were part of a service and we would do worship as part of that. We were really used to doing that. So as we started doing live shows, just touring and as a band, we would always do, you know, a song like Agnus Dei that Michael W. Smith had done years before. We recorded Agnus Dei on the Exodus project that came out in maybe 98. Worship was always a part of what we did. And so David Martis, his idea had been, hey, you guys need to do an album of that just showcases that side of what you guys do. And we said, yeah, that's a great idea. And he wasn't in the picture anymore by this point, but we had negotiated when we first signed with a record company that there was going to be this praise and worship album that was going to be, you know, part of the deal. And so it kind of came time to do that. And we, by that point, we, as I mentioned earlier, we were huge U2 fans. You know, you can't, you know, it's like you can't be a Christian musician if you don't eat at Chick-fil-A and listen to U2. So, but, you know, we all loved Rattle and Hum. We all started watching that film, you know, concert film on the bus. And we just loved that idea where there was the part live and the part studio. So we made this album that was that. And yes, it was a, you know, worship kind of themed album. I mean, and it was worship by our definition. I mean, there's songs on there like Thief that is really like kind of a story song in hindsight. I wouldn't necessarily consider that a worship song, but so that's what it was. And I remember the big debate with the record company was they wanted to call it a worship album. We were just going to call it Offering. So they wanted to have that worship album. And it was really just a thing where just to set it apart so people knew that it was different than a normal album. I don't think that, you know, we were trying to really capitalize on anything at that point in time. And to be 100% honest, I feel like we just kind of like just, you know, and it's a God thing, really. We were just in the right place at the right time where, you know, you'd had bands like Delirious had come along maybe a year or two before from the UK that were pointing towards this worship thing. And Matt Redman was on the scene a little bit then. But we just sort of came along at a time where people were just ready for that. And we put that album out. And I think also another part of the success with Offerings was it almost was like the, you know, back in the 70s, you had the band Kiss that they did like three albums, studio albums. And then it was when they put out their live album that everybody was like, oh, wow, this band is really cool, because they were able to capture like what the band's all about by having those live songs. I feel like a lot of the success of Offerings was because we were able to do that. We were able to take songs like Your Love, O Lord, and Thief, and I think Love Song was on the album. Some of the big songs from our first three albums were on Offerings.
Right.
So I think it was a way to like capture like, wow, this is a cool band, and here's some of their best live moments from the, you know, the early, maybe first 5 years of our career. So, yeah, so that all happened, and it just happened very organically. It was not, you know, it was not forced. It wasn't, you know, necessarily a deliberate thing. And then you saw, like, we were kind of part of that initial wave of this worship thing becoming a big deal, you know, and it wasn't a radio format. You know, now they have Air One's flipped over to where they're all worship now. It wasn't a radio format. Nobody was thinking about that kind of thing. It wasn't on people's radar. And then to see it evolve into this this thing where, you know, you go to church, any church, you know, any Sunday, and they're going to be doing a lot of the same songs. And, you know, the way they have it with these worship tracks now, like it's like you're literally hearing the same parts, you know, at every church, you know, across the country. And so it's been, I will say it's been, It's been good. I mean, I think it's always good. And I think it's a genuine, there's a side of it that's a genuine move of God that, the people, the church has, embraced worship as a big part of not just Sunday morning. You know, I think that's evolved, the Sunday morning things evolved from the hymns and the big choirs to where you have the band and the worship music. I think that's all great. And I think that through doing that, I think people have been able to use that in their own individual worship. You know, you have this music that's been recorded. So yes, you can worship, with the congregation Sunday morning, but then you can listen to, Bethel Music or Elevation or, Passion Records or, even Pat Barrett is a guy from Atlanta. I'm a big fan of his. You can listen to that music. It's when you're driving around in the car and you can have this personal kind of time of worship. I think that's awesome. I think that if there's a part of it that frustrates me, it's not that worship has gotten really popular. It's just that the definition of worship, it feels like with each passing year, gets more and more narrow. I feel like the Offerings album was, we just did what we did and called it worship. And it was, there was a little bit of a debate, is this even really a worship album? And I think that's a good thing. I think it's a positive thing. But it's turned into now where worship means a very certain, very specific thing. I literally, right before I called you to do this interview, I got an invitation. All the churches have the same little software, and they'll send you out an invitation to be part of the worship band, and they're going to have the charts, and everybody's pulling from the same pool of a few dozen songs. And it's just become this very, very just samey kind of thing that's happening everywhere. And it makes me miss the days of 20 years ago when you'd go into a church you go to a different denomination and they'd be doing different songs. They'd have a different style of worship and everything, to where now everything is kind of the same. So it makes me miss, that time before. I will say, too, the other side of it, though, is I love that there are people writing new worship songs. And to give you a little story as an example, I played, and there's a brand new church in my hometown that's opening up, and I'm good friends with the pastor, and I came in to help them do worship the other night. And so I did God of Wonders, I did Agnus Dei, and then I did a couple of newer worship songs. But, I did a couple of Third Day songs as part of that. And I had a couple of two or three younger people that came up to me afterwards. And they said, man, that's really cool that you're doing those, old-timey worship songs. And so, on the one hand, it's like, oh, man, that kind of hurts, because it's these songs that, I was a part of, making popular. And then now, that feels old to people. But the other side of it, though, is I love that there are people that are still writing new songs that are resonating with the church. And I think it's a cool thing. It's for me, I could be like Saul in the Bible was and see, the younger king coming along and literally go crazy about it. Or I could be, more of the model of like the New Testament that Paul talked about, where you're going to have younger people coming in and you need to mentor them. And that's what I really, in kind of the role that I'm in now, I hope that I'm able to, instead of resenting younger artists coming in and new songs and things like that, rather than resenting them, I hope that I can be an encouragement and a mentor in the same way that, as we were talking about Rich Mullins earlier, how he was able to be a great encourager to us. I hope that I'm able to be that way to a new artist.
It's funny you say that, because our church did God of Wonders not too long ago, and I helped lead worship there, and a younger person asked me, that's a cool new song that you guys did this week.
So,
those kinds of songs are kind of new to this newer generation, too. So
it's newer, but then at the same time, if you think about it, God of Wonders came out in 2000, so it's old enough to vote now. It's an old song in a lot of ways.
So you've been doing this tour with David Glenn. Can you tell us a little bit about that and kind of also how people can book you guys?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So David Glenn is a worship pastor at a church outside Atlanta. I mentioned earlier about how Scotty Wilbanks produced and helped me write for my EP last year. Scotty's also really good friends with David and has produced a couple of projects for him. And so David and I met through Scotty about a year ago. David invited me to come help lead worship at his church. It was Palm Sunday last year, so almost a year ago to the day. And we became friends. We got together a couple times to write songs together. And he approached me towards the end of last year. He was like, "Hey, man, what would you think about you and I joining forces? Let's do a tour together, and we can book and just play in churches." And I was like, I would love to do that. The idea of playing in churches and just encouraging the local body of Christ in different cities we go to, it's very dear to my heart. And with Third Day for so many years, it got to where we every now and again play in churches, but usually we play in a theater at the college, or we play at like the little hockey arena in town or whatever. We didn't play at church as much. So I loved that idea to the point that we ended up calling it the church tour. So we're doing about a dozen shows this spring. Most of them were in the Southeast, but we were up in Virginia and Maryland this past weekend, and we're going to be going up to New England in a couple weeks here. We'll be in Massachusetts and Connecticut up there. So we're excited about that. But yeah, we've been having a great time on this tour, and it's been a lot of back and forth. Like, he and I, we have a percussionist that comes out with us, and we'll do some songs together at the beginning, and then David will do a set, and then I'll do a set, and then at the very end, I bring those guys back up, and we do some more songs together. And it's been a really neat, just collaborative kind of show. So we've really enjoyed doing that. As far as if you're interested in booking me, I think the easiest way right now is if you go to my website. It's marklee.me. I wish it was marklee.com, but there's a web developer guy out in California that anytime some new Mark Lee thing comes out, he's already got it before I even know about it. It's marklee.me/booking. If you go to that, you can, there's like a little form you can fill out. And yeah, I'd love to, if you want me to come in and play at your church. I'm in the process of booking up. The summer is starting to get pretty full. I still have a few dates in the summer that I could fill in. And then especially this fall, I'm just now starting to figure out what the fall of 2019 is going to look like. So yeah, hit me up. I'd love to come play at your church. It'd be a lot of fun.
That's awesome, man. Thank you so much for your time. I'm looking forward to hearing some new music from you.
Absolutely. And I'm actually, I wanted to get this in there. I'm working on some new music. Okay. I've been with, Ian Eskelin, who was the singer for All Star United that we toured with many years ago. Yeah. He's a great producer now. He's a songwriter. Yeah. He's written some really big songs. He produced Francesca Battistelli, a couple of her albums, and he was actually producer of the year a few years back at the Devil Wars. He and I have been working together. We've got a couple of songs that we're working on that'll be coming out later this spring. I'm hoping to get them released by, like, say, May. I'm doing this tour with David Glenn, and then I'm going to embark on, it'll be back to me doing like solo stuff. So I'm hoping to have all this new stuff done by then, so I'll have some new songs to play this summer. But yeah, be on the lookout for that. I don't have a title for it. I don't have a release date for it yet, but it's happening. It's coming soon, so be on the lookout for that.
That's good to hear, man. Thank you again for your time. That was our interview with Mark Lee. I'd like to thank Mark from Third Day for joining us. And if you listen to the full interview, you heard a few shout-outs to kind of what he's been doing. He has a book called Hurt Road that you can check out. He has an EP called Unshakable Heart that you can check out. He's currently on tour with David Glenn, which you can check out. And he also is working on new stuff that you can check out. And you can check all that out on his social media pages and on his website that was referenced in the interview. And it's a fun way to support him. And it's, man, that was a great interview.
I think that my favorite part was, like, you guys went through each album and talked about each album, but he also emphasized what their mindset was in between each album. And that's a good, I mean, they, like you said, that their first three albums are probably on your, they're on your regular playlist.
Yeah.
And he talked about how the different influences and stuff went in, and that might be educational to someone who's trying to put out their first or even second album. Just, I mean, he talked about the influences and some things that they didn't like, some things that maybe pushed them in a direction they didn't necessarily want to go. But, I mean, they were all great albums, but they were influenced all differently.
Yeah, and it's interesting to go back and listen to that after you hear that interview and just kind of listen to how it sounds, and after you hear what it, you know, how they recorded it, you know, they, that Time record, they just basically set up a band up in the studio and just played.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
Wow. That album we're going to talk about later, but it is, I would say it's different from my normal genre, but I know every word on that album.
And that was an interesting era because bands felt like they could take risks a little bit more at that time than now, I would say, because everything seems to be so planned and, I don't know, sterile, I guess. I don't know if that's the right word.
Pristine.
Yeah.
Perfect.
I mean, bands are so careful about having that perfect sound that they're afraid to have that raw sound nowadays. It seems like,
I think
from
it's
my
coming
perspective
back,
anyway.
Though. It's like,
I hope so.
Because I think a lot of people, they did their perfectly produced album, and it still wasn't what they wanted. And now a lot of people, a lot of bands are going back to their roots, what they grew up with playing, and I think that raw sound is coming back.
I hope so. I mean, that you listen to those first three albums, any kind of, any fan of Christian music back then, there's so many songs from their catalog that come to mind, but a lot of those come from those first three albums.
Oh yeah.
So since it was a lengthy interview, we won't keep you guys for too long. If you want to hear more about the behind the scenes interview and more about our discussion about the album Time, you can check that out exclusively for Patreon subscribers. That's patreon.com/decentchristiantalk. For the rest of you, we're heading off into the sunset. We would love if you would check out our podcast. We're on iTunes, we're on Spotify. We would love if you listen to it on iTunes, if you could give us a nice 5-star review. We would greatly appreciate that.
Very much so. That helps people find us, actually. If they're searching for a podcast and there's good reviews, then it bumps us up on the search engines.
Yeah, and we would also like to say that we are on Facebook and Facebook discussion page. We are also on Instagram at DC Talk Podcast, and we have a website, decentchristiantalk.com, and everything that we post is on there.
And we are also recording in the 13 Palm Trees Podcast Studios. I don't know if you can hear, Gabe's son is just going to town in the background.
Yeah,
it's great. You might hear more of him on the bonus episode.
That's very possible. But we will catch you guys next time. Thank you for checking us out. And if you know any Third Day fans, share this podcast with them if you think they'd like it. If you don't think they like it,
share it with them anyway. All right.
We'll catch you next time.
Don't forget to tip your waiters and waitresses. Thanks.
Peace.
Don't forget to tip your waiters and waitresses. Thanks.